Welcome back to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. We want to wish a happy anniversary to a Broadway show that pulled off the nearly impossible feat, a musical about the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks. Come From Away is based on the true story that happened after the U.S. airspace was closed for the first time in history on September 11th. 7,000 transatlantic passengers were diverted to the 9,000-person town of Gander in Newfoundland.
Yeah.
The audience is laughing because these folks gave me a great mnemonic device and I blew it.
That's great.
But if you can picture that, that's like 6 million people suddenly showing up on the island of Manhattan. And that's where the story of the Tony Award-winning Broadway musical Come From Away begins. The rest of the show records this inspiring generosity that the townspeople on that remote island displayed while housing and caring for their surprise guests. Here's a clip from the show. This is the song, Welcome to the Rock.
On the northeast tip of North America, on an island called Newfoundland, there's an airport. And next to it is a town called Gander. Tonight we honor what was lost, but we also commemorate what we found.
The musical opened 2 years ago this week, and it opened in the West End in London last month and was just nominated for 9 Olivier Awards, and this summer it opens in Australia. I'm joined on stage by the musical's creators, Irene Sankoff and David Hine, who wrote the book and the music and the lyrics for the show. Also, Joel Hatch, who plays Gander's mayor, Claude, who we just heard in the clip, and Alex Fink, who plays Janice, the young journalist having to cover all of this. Welcome to All of It, and happy anniversary.
Thank you so much.
David and Irene, how did you first hear about the story of Gander?
Well, we were living in Manhattan on September 11th, so we kind of knew what happened, but justifiably our focus was really on what was happening right around us. And it was about 10 years later, a friend of ours mentioned to us that he thought that what happened in response would make a good musical. And apparently he'd approached about 5 or 6 other teams, and they'd all said, I don't think so. But but we were game.
Yeah, and we started rabbit-holing on it, and we found out there was going to be a 10-year anniversary commemoration ceremony that was happening in Newfoundland. And all of these Come From Away as the people who had been stranded there were returning 10 years later to reconnect with the friends they had made there and to commemorate what had happened. And we applied for a grant from the Canadian government, and we got it because our government is amazing. And and we traveled out there.
Oh, you Canadians bragging.
With healthcare.
Justin. Well, Justin right now, huh?
So, anyway, we got to go out there for almost a month, and we actually got to stay out there longer because we had this budget to stay in hotels, and no one out there would let us stay in a hotel. They said, oh, don't be spending money on a hotel. Come stay with us.
Wow.
And we'd stay with them, and we interviewed people for hours at a time, and every story was better than the next one.
So what was the process? You gather your stories, you do all your research, do you just come home and lock yourselves in a room? What was the process of writing it?
It was, yeah, it was.
That's pretty much it.
We literally locked ourselves in a room.
Up in Parry Sound, actually. My brother has a cabin up there, and so he let us use the cabin, and we were up there for about a week just sifting through all of these stories with no Wi-Fi, and eventually just you know, found stories about food, found stories about children, found stories about love, and then just started to like kind of try to put them together chronologically, and then deciding that would take like 17 hours. So then we needed to start to like pare stuff down and amalgamate storylines and find characters who were at the 10th anniversary that had an interesting story for us to follow all the way through, like whose lives had been profoundly changed. And that's how we ended up with, you know, for instance, Captain Beverly Bass, because her whole industry changed, but also somebody like Janice, who Alex portrays, who, you know, was faced with, you know, perhaps a big opportunity and was like, you know what, I like it where I am. So it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to talk to these people. And oh my gosh, they love to talk. So we were very lucky that way.
Alex, tell us about your character, Janice, and where she is when all of this goes down.
Sure. So I play Janice, in other words, Janice Mosier's her name. And like many characters in the story, I'm actually a composite. So I represent Janice Scouty and also Brian Mosier, who were two of the reporters in Newfoundland on that day. And you meet her sort of on her very first day of work, and that's the attacks on 9/11. And as the story unfolds for her, it's about broadcasting the necessary news to the town so that they can coordinate for all of these plane people, really making sure everyone's taken care of, and also sort of dealing with her own newness of the job and the stress of that and wanting to do a good job on a very, very important event.
So you replaced the one who did the original, correct?
Yes.
So you had a newness on the job. When you join a cast of people yes. who have been doing it for this much time, tell us a little bit about how you integrated in and what that experience is like.
Sure. I joined about 6 months into the Broadway run and replaced Kendra Kassebaum. And it's a unique experience because, you know, they had years to develop this and rehearse together and build it from the ground up. And I sort of learned it by myself with the help of our, you know, associates and everything in a room with 12 chairs. And sometimes that was it. And it was definitely one of the hardest things I've ever had to learn, just because it's so quick moving. You're constantly, not only are you worried about, you know, what's my line, where am I standing, but a lot of times we're passing off props, jackets, and helping each other move things and take care of everyone else. But ultimately, I think the transition was really, really smooth, and that really speaks to the community that they have here at the show. I was welcomed with such open arms in a way that I found surprising. I've replaced in other shows and not been met with the same hospitality, and I really just think it says the world of our producers, of David and Irene, and of Joel and the rest of the company, that they just welcome me with open, open arms and a lot of love and support and safety.
Something about this show.
Yeah.
Something about this show. Joel, you play the mayor. Tell us a little bit about how the mayor dealt with all of these people coming to his town.
Well, it's interesting. I spent some time talking with Claude up in Gander, and I got more of his backstory. He was an emergency medical technician for years before he became mayor of Gander. So he thinks in that mind frame of an emergency personnel. He sees a situation. He's not emotional. He sees what has to be done first. He triages a situation. One of the first things he did when he came to become mayor of Gander was had the city administrator put together a book of all the really important people to get in the room if something terrible happened, some tragic event happened at the airport, which had happened when he was an EMT years before. And he said, we opened that book, we got all the important people in the room within an hour of hearing of the tragedy. And he said, so by the time, so many hours later, those people got off the planes, we were able to have 7,000 sandwiches. We were able to have water. We were able to have places for them to go. And he said, it's because that preparation had been done way ahead of time, that they were ready and able.
You've been a working actor. When you first heard about this project, a musical yeah. about the aftermath of 9/11, mm-hmm. what did you think when you first heard it, and then what after you read the book?
Well, I really didn't hear about the project, except my agent said, there's this audition I want you to go to. Here's the script. And I thought, okay. And I opened the script, and usually when you read the script for a musical, it's not as exciting as when you see it. It's actually kind of boring.
Because really, in music, the emotion of a musical is carried in the music. And I started reading this script, and I couldn't put it down. I was laughing, I was crying, I was all over the place with it. And I thought, this is the most amazing story. These people are amazing. And I had to be in it.
When you started shopping this to producers, what was your pitch? Because this is, I can imagine this is both very easy to pitch, but also difficult.
You know, when we first started this, we clearly never expected we would be here celebrating 2 years on Broadway. We initially thought that Canadian high schools might be forced to do it. historical Canadian content, we never imagined pitching it, and we actually haven't really ever pitched it. What we did was we told the story, and it's this incredible story about people being kind in response to tragedy, and this incredible people who say that what they did on that day was ordinary, and you know, every time we brought it to someone, they would respond by saying, this is extraordinary, we have to do this. It was the same thing as Joel said, and you know, it was the same thing that inspired us when we first heard the stories, and then bringing it step by step through the initial workshops with students to an eventual festival here in New York. And you know, it was scary to bring it to a U.S. audience. We really never really expected that. And I think as New Yorkers ourselves at the time, Canadian New Yorkers, you know, my cousin was in the towers, but fortunately got out. But we specifically didn't want to write a show that was a 9/11 story. We wanted to write a 9/12 story. We wanted to write a story about how these people responded to the tragedy with kindness. And we didn't want to make it about, you know, about what happened in New York, but instead, we didn't want to replace those memories. What we wanted to do was add something else to that day, to remember that on days like that, on days like this in New Zealand, that there are always people helping in the background, and it reminds you that there's still good in the world. And so time and again, when our producers first talked to us, they also said, this is a title that no one can remember. They said it has no stars in this. No offense, guys. And everyone's going to call it the 9/11 musical. And so they said, we don't know if this is going to go to Broadway. I don't think they did think it was going to go to Broadway. And yet the first production of it, we did it down in La Jolla in San Diego, as far as we could possibly get away from Newfoundland. The first night there was a standing ovation, and you could see these people responding to this story and how important it was, even though it was, you know, years and years later, it still was relevant because we're dealing with this day in and day out. And especially in right now when our news feeds are so filled with divisiveness and anger and us and them, it feels good to have a story about people coming together. And I think that's what people have responded to time and time again. So we've never, to go back to your question, we haven't had to pitch it really. We've just had to tell the story, and that's all we wanted to do. We were inspired by the story, and we wanted to share it with more than just Canadian high schools, and we've been very fortunate to do that.
My guests are the cast and creators of the musical Come From Away. We'll have more with them after a quick break. This is All of It on WNYC. This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. I'm joined by the creators of Come From Away, Irene Sankoff and David Hine, as well as two stars of the show, Joel Hatch and Alex Fink, and our live audience. Yep. So we're all New Yorkers, and people, New Yorkers, we're cynical kind of by nature. Maybe not Canadian New Yorkers, but New Yorker New Yorkers. I'm interested, Joel and Alex, one of the things that's so great about this show is it's really earnest, and it's really honest. How do you play Ernest?
You know, it's interesting. At first, when we started working on the piece back in La Jolla, the piece allows us as human beings to get emotional easily. And our director, after allowing us time to grieve and have those moments, said, okay, now your job is just to tell the story. You have to get out of the way so the audience can decide when they need to feel emotion, when they need to have joy, when they need to experience a story. You can't bring your own stuff. So that was really freeing. And that, it just allows you to just honestly, this happened. Just tell the story. And I think that's earnest.
Mm-hmm. I think the piece is also just, you don't have to play earnest or honest because the piece is that inherently. David and Irene have done such an incredible job, you know, gathering so much information, so many interviews, and a lot of times the words coming out of our mouths as lines on stage are taken directly from those interviews. So, you know, we're really just honoring exactly what happened, what mm-hmm. people said, and there's something that there's not, you can just sort of be yourself and be, you know, as the character, but just tell the story. There's not really playing anything.
Mm-hmm. Irene, in the play also, it deals with bigotry. It deals with a Muslim passenger and how people start to react to him. Why was that important to include, and was that a true story?
It's a true story, but it is probably the most, no, it probably is definitely the most heavily amalgamated character. And just the way that the world changed that day, it just made it so, it was just so important to include it. And, you know, especially since, you know, back home, one of the people we interviewed while trying to create this character, because, you know, probably not surprisingly, as we were trying to find people to interview, there wasn't anyone who returned to Newfoundland. There was actually a journalist who was there for the 10th anniversary, and we met him randomly at a barbecue in Toronto and then tried to catch him, and that he'd never returned our calls. Anyway, it was really, really hard, so I began interviewing friends, like a woman from my baby group, and people that are friends of the family, and just needing to show the humanity of you know, how this is just another way of loving, another way of believing, just like everybody else, it just became completely integral to the story. And we took as many of the other true stories as we could find and put them together to create Ali.
I think there was also a sense of, you know, we often talk about the kindness of what happened out there, but we rarely talk about the bravery and the intelligence of what they did. And a lot of what we needed to do in the show was show that they also overcame fear and they also overcame confusion. And they had 7,000 people on the tarmac, almost their entire town's population, and they could have kept them there. They could have kept them bottled up on those planes, and they would have, and all the anger and all of the confusion and all of that fear, they could have kept that on the airplanes. They didn't need to allow them into their towns, or they could have kept them in the airport. But instead, they brought them into their legion halls and their churches and their basements. And then they said, "You don't look comfortable there. Why don't you come back to my house? Why don't you stay in my bed in my house? I don't know who you are, but why don't you stay here? I'll wash your clothes. You can have a shower. Now, why don't you stay for dinner? Now, why don't you stay over?" And Claude actually says, he says, on the first day, they had 7,000 strangers on the tarmac. By the middle of the week, they had 7,000 friends. And by the end of the week, they said goodbye to 7,000 family members.
There are laughs in this musical. There are some big belly laughs. One of the ones I remembered was the young black guy. One of the men from Canada's like, "Just go into the house and take that thing." And he's like, "Really?" And it's just, it's a moment. It's a lighthearted moment, but it's also a political moment. It was interesting to watch you juggle the politics and the humor and the humanity. I there's no real question. I just wanted to say that. That was interesting to as somebody trying to enjoy the show, but also as a news person, like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it was. Finding the balance. I think overall, you know, we could have easily, you know, not found the balance by just doing too many food stories. There's a lot of food stories,
you know. Yeah.
But finding the balance was really important to us. But luckily, we were really. We were gifted with these incredible storytellers out in Newfoundland, and they do this amazing thing where they will tell you the story where you're about to well up and your eyes are filling, and then they'll suddenly say, no, here's a joke, you know, and that's how they take care of you. And that's what the experience was. There was a lot of tears. There was a lot of laughter. And initially when we first, you know, showed it in at Goodspeed with an American audience, we were terrified by how much laughter. Yes. But it was because we had been told, you know, these really amazing, funny things, and by these gifted storytellers, and we were passing it on. And I think, you know, what's interesting is people talk a lot about the tears and how much they cry during the show, and there's this wonderful thing about Kleenexes being passed by strangers up and down the rows, and it's really wonderful how much of a community it creates. But a lot of people don't talk about that the tears are often, they're joyful tears. That, you know, we're so used to seeing these horrible things that you're actually shocked into crying by seeing something so good and seeing that people are actually good. It makes you cry. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think, just to go back to the smart thing and back to the barbecues, I think it was, you know, a planned move on Derm Flynn's part to be like, to keep him busy. You know, this guy was nervous and whatever, and he couldn't explain to him that he was okay, but what he could do is be like, okay, here's your job, go and do this.
Go steal barbecues.
And it meant that his mind was taken up by something, and at the same time he was learning, oh no, I really am safe here. So it's just like their intelligence is so great.
Mm-hmm. One of the main characters is one of the pilots, a female pilot, and Jen Colella was going to be here today. She plays the pilot, but she hurt her back, so we send good wishes to her. But she's Beverly, who you mentioned, and let's take a look at her singing Me and the Sky, and on the other side, we'll get a little bit of video of the real Beverly.
American Airlines had the prettiest planes, so I applied as a flight engineer. World War II pilots, they all complained. They said girls shouldn't be in the cockpit. Hey lady, hey baby, hey, why don't you grab us a drink? And the flight attendants weren't my friends back then, and they said, are you better than us, do you think? But I kept getting hired, and the World War II crew, they retired, and the girls all thought much higher. The first female American captain in history. Suddenly I'm in the cockpit. Suddenly I've got my wing. Suddenly all of those pilots protesting me, well, they can get their own drinks. Suddenly there's no one saying stay grounded.
So that was fabulous. And equally as fabulous is the real Beverly talking about the first time she saw that.
When I went back for the 10th anniversary and I was told that they wanted to interview me, you know, I came downstairs and I saw these two young kids sitting there and I'm like, okay, college kids, you know, but I'll talk to them. I mean, whatever. And we probably talked for 3 or 4 hours. So when I saw the play for the first time, I mean, I was just blown away at how fabulous it is. I was shocked at my parts. I didn't know that my life story had been put to music, and really I spent probably 75% of the time at the first play with my head buried in my hands. My husband and I are just sobbing. We can't even like see the play. So I can just now, tonight will be the 7th time that I've seen it, I can just now get through my song without crying because I love it. I mean, it's beautiful.
So you were those kids.
Yeah, just kidding. I should mention that some time has passed since then. She's now seen it over 120 times.
Wow. So do you remember that conversation with Beverly?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were completely nerding out. We wouldn't let her leave. We just kept asking more and more questions. And then for like, you know, 10 minutes, we're like, maybe it's just Beverly Bass, the musical. You know, we just could not stop talking to her.
I know. I waited a long time to go see the musical because I worked at ABC News at 9/11 and was down there every night. And I just didn't have it in me to go. I was so happy once I did. And I went with my family. I took my family. Joel and Alex, I'm really interested in what people have told you about how they felt about the musical.
Well, Q and I had a meet and greet last week with 40 NYPD first responders who were there that day. And they, it was interesting because they were not exactly happy to be coming and seeing the show. But once they'd seen it, their comments. One detective said, it gives me perspective. We weren't alone. There are other people. So I think that's healing, mm-hmm, to know that there's a whole world of good people all working together. And I think that gives a little bit support about something that was really traumatic. Yeah.
I think, you know, we have the privilege of doing a lot of meet and greets and talkbacks and just going out of the stage door every night, that and people have been waiting, and whether it's, you know, first responders or people who lost someone in the attacks or people who were actually plane people to Newfoundlanders coming and, you know, saying like, have you ever been to Gander? You got to come here, stay in my house, and giving you their email address. You know, it also, Joel talks a lot about perspective for them to remember that no one was alone on that day. It also, you know, it gives me such perspective every night. Like, the gifts I get from the show, I feel, are far greater than anything that I'm giving in some ways, because it's a reminder that we're all human, we're all capable of choosing kindness, it's available to us at all times. And it's just been amazing to watch this piece heal people who, you know, everyone knows exactly where they were on 9/11. You don't forget that day. I was 11 and I remember. So that everyone can find something good in this story and heal whatever part of themselves has been needing it for, you know, almost 20 years since the attacks now, which is kind of crazy to think about, is a really, really beautiful thing.
Last night we had a really interesting thing. First time it's ever experienced it. A group of women started singing a Newfoundland anthem at the end of the show. And it was after the applause was done, and the whole audience then applauded for that. And it was a very, very sweet moment.
My guests have been Irene Sankoff, David Hine, Joel Hatch, and Alex Fink from Come From Away. Happy anniversary. Thank you for writing the show.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for joining us on all of it. This is all of it on WNYC.